This is Eve Harrow on Rejuvenation for the Land of Israel. It is early July 2016, and I am right now probably living most women's dream. I'm sitting in a bakery, and this is a great place to run an interview. I am with David Katz and his bakery called Pat B'Melach in Kibbutz Rosh Tzurim in Gush Etzion. So thank you, David, covered with flour, for taking a break from your kneading to be part of this interview. Tell me, what is this place? It's not just a bakery.
Okay, this is a sourdough bakery, a bakery that creates all the breads using only flour, water, and salt, like in the olden days, pre-industrial revolution. Bakeries that used old doughs to create new doughs. This is something that human beings discovered thousands of years ago. We stopped doing it about 100 years ago or so, you know, when things became industrialized. And ever since then, breads became something that were not healthy.
So I remember being in San Francisco a few years ago. We went to the famous sourdough place there. Yeah. And they told us the story that during that big earthquake, which I forget what it was, in San Francisco, they grabbed the starter. Like, forget the family albums, forget the kids. Grab the dough. Can you tell me, like, chemically speaking, or however that works, what's going on with that dough?
Well,
it's alive?
Just to add to it, yes. Just to add to what you're saying, you know, there are the bakeries in Europe that have their basic dough rejuvenated and alive for 300 to 500 years. This is and what's happening there is basically the microflora activity living in the dough are keeping themselves alive, and once they're added to a new dough, they develop the dough, break down sugars better, develop a more digestible gluten, and all the good things that bread used to, you know, bread used to keep human beings alive for 5,000 years. So it's those little wild yeast and wild bacteria that are used to create these breads, which are remarkably digestible and very tasty. So those two things together is what makes this a sourdough bakery unique.
So you're saying that the Industrial Revolution bread got less healthy?
Like, correct.
Is it easier to make it?
Well, it's both in terms of wheat growing, genetically modified wheats, and cultivating more product per acre, mm-hmm. As well as high speed mixing, sifting out all the bran, all the germ from the flours, and only using white flours, and of course using commercial yeast, which is one strain out of thousands of strains that are out there, which leavens bread and makes it puff up very quickly, but really doesn't unlock or release any of the nutrition that is available in the wheat, which is there, but just hasn't been unlocked. When you use sourdoughs, you unlock this the nutrition that's available in the wheat.
So I went to a very interesting Torah lesson, actually, a couple of years ago, with Rav Yoel Binun, who I believe you know. You studied at the Yeshiva of Gush Etzion, where he teaches. And he contends that the tree of knowledge, Pri Etz Hadat, was actually not a tree. It was wheat.
Correct.
You're familiar with this theory. What do you think of that? Or maybe expound on a little bit for our listeners.
Look, I mean, at the dawn of human civilization, when man began to settle in villages and we moved from hunters and gatherers to villages and cities, it was all around wheat cultivation. So it makes sense that this...
the agricultural revolution.
Well, it could be called the agricultural revolution. It could be, it's called, when man started cultivating as opposed to running around, mm-hmm. and farming. The archaeological record has demonstrated this. It's been all around wheat. The three major chagim on the Jewish the holiday cycle are based on the rain and grain cycle, which is one of the things we demonstrate in our tourist activity here, and mm-hmm. Visit here, where you have Sukkot, which is about rain, and then Passover, which is about the beginning of the grain harvest, and Shavuot, which is really the time when grain is dried out in the field and it's milled into flour, and you can bake your first loaves of bread of that year. So the Jewish holiday system follows very carefully the rain and grain cycle in Israel, of ancient Israel, as where the temple, the Beit HaMikdash in Jerusalem, is the place where this is all celebrated.
And a lot of the temple, you had bread in the temple.
Well, correct, meaning the Shavuot was the time where people aren't really aware of this, that Shavuot was the first time of the year where you baked your first two sour loaves sourdough loaves of bread as a celebration of this, like, you know, mm-hmm. successful harvest.
Successful harvest that allowed you to have food. Barley's
correct.
Not that tasty.
What we're doing here now is... We kind of coined the term here. It's called a gentle gluten development, where we're taking the gluten and we're stretching it like a human, like a muscle on in a human body, where, you know, the gluten strands are being stretched out very gently, not using a mixer. And in this way, it becomes much more digestible. They absorb more water, and the bread kind of like melts in your mouth as opposed to turning into like a sponge in the back of your mouth, and, you know, especially in your stomach. So
you're like adding a little water as you're kneading.
It's a fold. This is a professional baker's method that's used, but not necessarily not in factory bread.
You can't.
I mean, obviously machines can be made to do anything, and you know, we'll see where we go with that. But for now, this is how we can develop the gluten very gently, and you get this light, airy structure, and it's good to eat.
I wish my listeners could smell what I'm smelling.
Yes.
So in Judaism, there is a lot around bread. Like, we wash for a meal, and we wash specifically for bread, and then have to say the grace after meals for that. And of course, on Shabbat, we have two challot. So there's a lot of food in the world. Why specifically bread?
Well, I think it goes back to the beginning of human society, where bread was what kept people alive. That's what became worshipped and respected and thankful for, et cetera, et cetera. So any kind of religion is gonna, that started in an agrarian age, is gonna be looking at wheat as a main character.
Well, if we wanna get back to that story of Adam and Eve, and if that's, you know, if let's say that is the wheat, the punishment that he gets, the first curse that's given to Adam for misbehaving, is that he will, you know, make bread from the sweat of his brow, right?
It's probably connected to some kind of lack of appreciation of getting things for free. You need to work for your...
But specifically, the curse is on the bread, or at least that's the impression that we get, correct?
Yeah, well, I think grain, if you look at it, you know, the gluten people know all this. You know, like, they can't eat anything because everything has wheat in it.
Right.
Or the Pesach people know this because everything has wheat in it. Your dog, from your dog food to your, I don't know, whatever. So, wheat is a staple of human society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Egypt, you know, is credited with, in the baker's world at least, with the real development of fermented breads and sourdough breads, and a lot of bakers, not specifically Jewish, from Jewish, you know, groups, credit Egypt with the beginning of, the Sar HaOfim and the Sar HaMashkim, the brewers and the bakers,
in the biblical story of Joseph and the dream?
Correct, exactly. Where they, the baker and the fermenter, and the brewer or the vintner or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So they were credited with this skill of fermentation. And, you know, industrializing it or creating.
Right, so I've read also that the first beer was made there, and that's why also they think that it was possibly women who did that as well. That women were possibly the first brewsters.
Probably.
Because beer is essentially liquid bread, right? More or less.
It's a fermented grain.
Yeah.
Yes. Bakers used to take the foam on top of beer and put it in their bread to leaven the breads.
So what is the meaning then of Passover, where we're actually supposed to not have leavened bread? Do you see a connection there?
I think it's connected to two things. One, it's part of the Egypt story and the redemption, where they didn't, I guess I would say, for bread, you're kind of stuck in one place. And the story of Egypt was this exodus. Like, today my bakers weren't here, and I was here, so I was stuck here all day. You know, you can't get up and go. With matzah, you can make it and go and come back, and, you know, like, so that, I think that's part as far as the Passover narrative, I think that's connected. As far as the agricultural narrative, it also makes sense that, you know, you kind of close down the previous grain cycle before Passover, and the first day of Pesach is actually the day that you start the new harvest, the Omer. So that's, I think those two are parallel.
Like a transitional kind of a place.
Yeah. They're both redeemed. The themes overlap, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this both, you know, the land has been redeemed, the people have been redeemed. I think there's a lot to play with there.
So Noah Harari, in his book of called Sapiens, or The History of Mankind, makes the claim that really the agricultural revolution, or what you said, going from hunters to farmers, is actually the worst thing that happened to mankind. Because, as you just said, we're stuck. We're stuck in the river valleys. We're stuck near the Tigris and Euphrates. We're stuck near the Nile. And then rulers can come in, and because we're stuck, they can rule over us. And I remember thinking, interestingly enough, that the first sacrifice, the first two brothers in the Bible, right? So you got Cain and Abel, and they each sacrificed to God. And it's actually the sacrifice of the shepherd that's accepted, and the sacrifice of the farmer that isn't. Do you think there's like a message here? Not to be stuck, not to let people kind of put you someplace where you can't move, both maybe in a spiritual sense or in a physical sense?
It's possible. I don't think there's a problem living in a city.
Yeah.
But...
Or living in a specific land.
I don't think we need to live in tents to be good people, but I there may be something there, you know.
Or some kind of like, don't be an extremist, like do a little of this and do a little of that.
I don't know. Yeah, look, I mean, the story of Babel, the Tower of, you know, was where they were corrected after they tried to stay in one place for too long and not expand.
Wait, so what is your personal background? Did you come from a baking family?
No, not at all. No, we had a shoe store.
Where?
Cleveland, Ohio. Go Cavs.
Okay, and how did you get to Israel? When did you come?
About 20 years ago. 20 years ago. You know, I grew up in Bnei Akiva, and, you know, Bnei Akiva summer camps. And, you know, it became part of the ideology of, you know, of, as being a way to... practice Judaism a little in a different way than outside of Israel.
Okay, so I understand the ideology and wanting to move to Israel, but why bake bread in Israel? You could have gone into high tech. You're a rabbi. Lots of things you could have done. You actually are an educator, but through bread, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I started my career with smicha, and I am
rabbinical ordination.
Yeah, I'm a rabbi, and teaching. I was teaching here for 10 years, both formally and informally. And I really liked bridging the formal and the informal quite a bit. And I was doing different projects like that, both in and out of the classroom. I started matzah baking. We did things with olive oil. And it was really nice kind of getting into it, learning the stories of all the people involved in it and the different histories and the Jewish angle on it and the Torah angle on it. It was nice kind of combining all those disciplines. Bread was actually an activity that can be done all year long, as opposed to matzah or olive oil or honey or whatnot. So I was leaning towards finding like a place that I could do things all year long. Now, the other side of it was that the more I learned about sourdough breads, the more I realized that there is a market for it. And... not people don't only enjoy eating the breads, but people are starting to learn how these breads are much healthier. And they're giving you the nutrition that people have been missing from the wheat for many, many years.
Wait, so forgive my ignorance. You can make sourdough from any kind of grain?
Correct.
So what do you make it out of? What do you prefer to make it out of?
Wheat, rye, and spelt.
Any one of them healthier, or they're all pretty much the same?
Everybody's different. You know, wheat's been, genetically modified quite a bit. Spelt is an older grain. You know, it's more expensive because you have about a third. Per acre, you can only grow about a third of the amount that you can wheat. So it's three times as much. Mm-hmm. Spelt, basically. Rye, it's a really annoying grain to work with, but it has a lot of... It's really sticky.
Okay.
It's really sticky and gooey, and this is what, you know... Eastern European Jews had to deal with.
Rye bread, yeah.
Not rye bread, it was whole rye bread. When they came to New York, the Jews discovered wheat. So they married rye with wheat, and that's what became New York Deli Rye, which we make here. But but the whole rye is like a whole different story. It's kind of a weird bread. People don't even realize it, but it has more dietary fiber in it, there's less gluten, so it's a little bit of a healthier grain, but it's not what anybody expects to see when you think flour.
Are these grains grown in Israel? You have to import
everything. You know what? The wheat is actually grown here.
Really?
The wheat is actually grown here. I spoke to the miller the other day. I went to the mill the other day to kind of talk shop with them, mm-hmm. You know, show my face. And the wheat is actually grown here now. during the sabbatical year, it wasn't, so they were bringing it in from Canada. But now the wheat is grown here. So.
All wheat for Israel? They can't,
no,
can't possibly.
No, no, no.
The one you use.
These artisan wheats. These artisan, you know, milled, things that are milled here. Mm-hmm. The white flour comes from Europe. The white bread flour comes from Europe. Everything else comes from Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The rye also, everything?
Yes.
So what do you do exactly here? First of all, what does pat b'melach mean?
Okay, pat b'melach means bread and salt. Okay, it's based on an old Jewish text that says basically that the road to piety in Torah, or the road to piety, begins with simplicity. So pat b'melach tochel, you should eat bread and salt, mayim b'mizra tishteh, you know, measure out your water, etc. You know. So like this idea of humility leading to greatness was a nice idea. I think it ties in nicely with bread, of course. And this idea of getting back to basics. Mm-hmm. And going back to making bread the way bread used to be made. So it all ties in nicely.
So you run workshops here. You didn't just open a bakery and have people come in and the bread's lined up and people buy what they want and they go. You actually are using this as a platform for educating about bread. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a great stop on the tour circuit. A great stop for the, you know, people in Israel that want to kind of get away, you know, like corporate getaways, or like families that want to have just special, you know, visitors in from the States or whatever. Mm-hmm. They come in and they scrub down. They get, you know, one or two doughs. They learn how to shape them and season them. And while they're rising, before we bake it, we can kind of tell the whole story of what we do here. We're going to be showing the little animation that we have that we just had made. And there's a lot of educational stuff. Some people like talking about more about nutrition. Some people like talking more about Jewish tradition. Some people just like having fun and making, you know, 100 pretzels and send them out to the soldiers. Different people like doing different things. And it's very flexible, and we're very happy to accommodate whatever people like to do. But most of all, people have a great time, which is really nice. I believe we've had thousands of people since we've opened a year ago.
Wow.
A lot of it is due to the air conditioner, and clean bathrooms, wheelchair
helps.
Accessibility and right. stuff. But it's really been great for families and for, you know, Jewish tour groups, Christian tour groups, families. It's been really fun.
I mean, maybe part of the attraction is also that if your hands are wrist deep in dough, you can't get to your cell phone. You can't answer those text messages. The phones all get put away, and people actually have to communicate. It's like that, some kind of...
That's, I haven't thought of that, but that's possible.
Really?
It's possible. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because once they're working, you know, when you come in, you start working. You know, you scrub in, put it on an apron, and you start working. And then you have a good half an hour before you can go wash your hands again. So, you know, people, some, you know, sensory, you know, people like, this one likes gloves, this one's like, my hands are gooey, what am I supposed to do? But it's all good.
What's your favorite bread to make? Do you have?
I don't know. It's nice to, you know, you never know what's, you know, I'll introduce this with, it takes 2 years to prepare, to train a professional baker.
Really?
Which is two times four seasons. Because every season, different things are happening in a bakery like this. The doughs are moving slower, the doughs are moving faster. The yeast, they know what's going on outside. So even though you try to turn on the air conditioning, they're still going crazy on a hot day. So the first four months, you learn what you're supposed to do, and the second 4 months, you fix all your mistakes. So we're in the middle of our second
round.
Our second 4 months, yeah. This is our second summer, so...
Yeah, I mean, you really make it sound like the yeast is alive. Like you're almost like have
alive.
A zoo here. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's all biology. Meaning, the same way that, you know, if I'd be wearing shorts on a winter day, I'd feel cold, even though the temperature is the same on the register inside the house. Because like, what are you wearing shorts for? Mm-hmm. You know, they know what's going on outside, and that's how they behave.
And how about your ovens? You need a special kind of oven to really bake bread?
Yeah, we use a professional deck oven. Which has a stone at the bottom. It heats a stone to a very high temperature, about, you know, close to 500 degrees Fahrenheit, 260 whatever, you know, centigrade. And what happens is a dough that hits a brick like that has what we call oven spring. So it will grow about 30% in the oven. So you need to work on your spacing and stuff. And the more room they have in the oven, the more they'll grow sometimes if you've done things properly.
Like a goldfish in a tank? They say goldfish grow according to the size of the tank.
Well, there you go. This oven, the wood-fired oven, is the prime example, the great example of that, because you're talking about a mass of like 3 tons of concrete going into 20 loaves of bread. So you have a mass of heat going into the bread, which really can give it a really nice rise and then finish with a really nice crust.
Do you have any plans to expand beyond bread?
No. No, we do breads, spreads I bring in from somebody else. Muffins, I wouldn't mind doing a good babka, but that's about it. You know, people come in, they want something sweet. They want something, you know, fun to use. But we want to specialize in breads and really get sourdough breads into people's homes. That's really the idea here.
So if someone's listening and they're thinking, well, I'm going to be in Israel or I live in Israel and I would really like to come by, how do they get in touch with you?
Website, Pat B'Melach, www.patbemelach.com. Come for a workshop. Come have a cup of coffee, you know.
At which languages? Everyone here is listening
English,
in
English. Hebrew.
English and Hebrew.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds great. David Katz, thank you so much. This is Eve Harrow, and now, if you don't think that I'm going to go and buy a loaf of bread, you got to be kidding. The Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. Don't forget, you can write to me, eve@thelandofisrael.com. Still planning those trips to the States, September and December. So be in touch. Take care, everybody. Goodbye for now.
Rabbi Isaac Nissenbaum, one of the founders of the religious Zionist Mizrahi movement, wrote, "The objective of Mizrahi is the total revival of our nation in all its aspects, to revive Judaism in our hearts and to revive our hearts for Judaism. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement."
Have you ever planted a grapevine? What if the grapevine happened to be in the Land of Israel? Not only that, but if you were a Christian planting this grapevine in the mountains of Israel, you would be fulfilling prophecy that Isaiah and Jeremiah foretold more than 3,000 years ago. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to fulfill prophecy on the mountains of Israel by joining us this harvest. Go to hayuvel.com, that's HAYOVEL.com, for more information.